Thanks for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. MassMEP believes that there are some elements to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding their inefficiencies, strengthening their internal processes, or even unlocking their growth, that can extend a manufacturer beyond its current limitations. So every episode, take a journey with us as we speak with manufacturers, legislature, subject matter experts, and so many more as we head down the path of manufacturing across the state of Massachusetts. Whether we're in Boston, Worcester, or out in Springfield, maybe even in the Berkshires, we'll be here every week and we'll explain to you more about manufacturing and what's happening right in your own backyard.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. I am Haley Steele.
And I am Kevin Tata.
Ooh, it's been a while, Kevin.
It's been a little bit. A little rusty, but I'm sure we can shake it off, get into it.
Cobwebs out.
Yeah, for
good
sure.
Good to go. Yeah. So we had a big event a couple weeks ago, right?
Massive event. Yeah. The biggest event, honestly.
Yeah, for you so far, right?
Yeah, so far. Yeah, it was a big one for sure. It was nice to see how we're obviously talking about manufacturing your future, smart manufacturing event. And it was just really cool to see how it all worked.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to see like our big shebang and how we do it from our side. And it was a lot of fun. The feedback we're getting has been extremely positive. We changed things up this year. We did some breakout sessions. We wanted to do a little value add for all of our manufacturers in the state of Massachusetts and those that were able to attend. So we doubled what we did a year ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Pretty impressive. So that's why we're here today. We're going to do a bit of a series where Kevin and I will be speaking to three different breakout session facilitators over the next three episodes. And it's a way for those of you that weren't able to attend to hear about what happened in those sessions. Why we picked those sessions? Well, obviously, it's because of the guests. They're very influential in what they do. A lot of fun, very entertaining, and very impactful. So that's why we picked these three. Not to say that the other rooms weren't as impactful, because they were. But we just thought these were kind of the top three that we felt really hit the spot for a lot of people, where they really wanted to know what was going on. So kind of the highlights as to what's happening right now with smart manufacturing. So that's why we're here today. So we have a first-time guest with us for our little podcast that we do. We like to say it's little, but we really hope to think that it's big. But today joining us is Hayden Quinlan. Hayden is the program manager of the MIT's Center for Additive and Digital Advanced Production Technologies. He did just tell me that he's trying to get that shortened. I like to go with what they have in parentheses, which is APT. He is an additive manufacturing career professional with a lot of experience leading major AM training programs and particular knowledge of the LPBF-based applications and cost modeling approaches for, I'm going to say this is additive manufacturing. That's what the AM stands for. I'm going to go with that. And I'm going to introduce. So welcome, Hayden. And now you can correct me on anything I just screwed up in your introduction.
Hello, and really, really happy to be here. So I heard that I was selected for being influential, fun, and impactful. And then you had to read the technical jargon in my bio, including LPBF. So I got to dig myself out of a hole a little bit. It's great to be here. I had a great time at the event, and I'm looking forward to chatting with y'all. And you did great with the acronym, Haley.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you, Hayden. I appreciate that. Yeah, I was, after a while, you kind of pick up. We're big acronyms in this world. So you kind of like maneuver through it and go, I think that's what this means, and I'm going to hope for it, and I'm going to try to hit it out of the park. So
there's like, quite a few.
Yeah. What is LPBF though, Hayden?
LPBF is a particular type of 3D printing, and I'll say 3D print. I'll probably call it additive manufacturing more commonly, but we use both terms. It stands for laser powder bed fusion.
Okay.
And so it's where you use a bed of powder, plastic, metal powder, and then selectively melt it with a laser layer by layer until you build a complete part.
Wow. Very fancy. Yeah. Very fancy. Okay. All right. Well, so Hayden, since this is your first time with us, Kevin knows how we work here. We always ask our guests an icebreaker question. And the icebreaker question is, I would say, I don't know. I think it's become infamous, Kevin, right? Some people love it.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to it every time.
I never know until
I hear it, you know.
He doesn't know what it is. I never tell him. It's one of those things where I just wing it. And I'll just start kind of going through things and go, I'm going to ask this question today. Usually it's the feeling I get from right when we start to get on to prep. And then when we talk with our guests for the first time, I get like, I think this would be a great question for them. So here is our icebreaker question. So Hayden, you will be able to answer first, unless Kevin is super excited and he puts his hand up and goes, I want to answer. I've got a great answer for this.
Guess first, always.
Right. Guess first, always. So if you could hang out with any cartoon character, who would you choose and why would you choose them? Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's a difficult question.
It is. Why is it difficult, Hayden?
Well, I don't watch cartoons that much. So I gotta dig deep into the historical memory.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll tell you a funny anecdote, and nobody knows this other than me and my boss.
Okay.
So there's a character in the Mario games called a Goomba. You ever seen those little brown mushroom looking guys? And for whatever reason, there was an emoji in our Slack channel. It was a Goomba emoji and he was like walking back and forth. And so I thought it was funny. And I said it to my Slack status or something, I don't know, years ago. And anyways, Goomba has become the code word for me and my boss. Anytime we have a direct, like our one-to-one Slack channel is called the Goomba channel. All of our agenda documents are called, you know, Goomba June 6th, 2023. So I'd probably hang out with one of those little guys, I guess.
That's so funny.
It. That's so great. I love it. And then you could let them know and say, thank you so much for, you know, expanding my world and into Goombas.
I don't know if they can speak, but they might, you know, make some chirps of happiness back to me.
Oh my gosh. I love it. That's great. I love it. That's great. All right. Well, now everybody that's in our audience knows that. So I hope that's okay that we can share that with the audience.
Yeah, spreading it to the world.
Don't be surprised if the audience starts sending you t-shirts with that on the front of your t-shirt. So you might get that from our audience.
You're gonna be pouring in.
Yeah.
we'll take a free t-shirt over here. I do work at MIT, so you
know. Oh no. Kevin, do you have one?
That is a tough question just because there are so many great cartoon characters out there, but I think I'm going to go with a classic, Bugs Bunny. I would love to be around Bugs. That would be great. Always getting out of whatever situation he's in, you know, I'd hang out with Bugs.
Yeah, you would. Okay. Not too bad. Okay. I'm pretty close. I would go with Wile E. Coyote. I'm sorry, but why? Can you just stop? It's not like you're not going to catch him.
It's not working.
Nothing works. There's no continuous improvement. Maybe some smart manufacturing would help him. Right?
Yep, absolutely. It could get the processes down a little bit quicker, more smoothly. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we could do some additive manufacturing, Hayden, that would help the Wile E. Coyote out a little bit in getting the Roadrunner. Maybe that would help. Maybe we could
will.
Do that.
We could 3D print a garage door painted like a highway that goes into the sunset, right?
Perfect.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. I love it. So yeah, so that's, so there we go. So we can obviously find a way to use additive if we needed to. So we can use our cartoons. I think that says a lot about each one of us and who we chose.
I do too. I think it's great.
Were you expecting for me to say something like that?
I don't know. I'm pleasantly surprised that we both picked the Looney Tune, you know?
I was close. I almost said the Tasmanian Devil. I was close with that one. And then I'm like, no, it's the Wile E. Coyote. Just like at some point, guy, you know, give it a break. Give it a break.
All right. How about we dive into the breakout sessions a little bit?
Yep. Let's do it.
All right, Hayden, in a few sentences, give us the highlights on what you spoke about and why.
Yeah. So the highlights. Well, I think, you know, which I tried to cover a lot in 45 minutes, but more or less just presenting an overview of what is 3D printing or additive manufacturing and what can you do with it and where should you kind of spend your attention. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different 3D printing processes, different vendors, materials, so on. So it can be hard, especially if you're a smaller organization, just to understand kind of where do you spend your limited time. That's not going to be a rabbit hole where you might find the Bugs Bunny at the end, but instead, you know, a good use of your time. And so give a simple overview of what it is. 3D printing, forming parts layer by layer. That's where the additive comes from, rather than a subtractive process where you're machining material away, or a formative process where you're forming it in a mold.
Okay.
As far as materials, so on that you can print, in on the one hand, the sky's the limit. Polymers, composites, metals, you name it. On the other hand, there are some constraints. I'm not going to get into all the nuances there, but there's a limited material subset that work with printing machines, and they're not always the same as the materials that you might work with if you're milling them out, for example, but they're similar, mainly from the casting industry on the metal side. And then a perspective on where you get started. And honestly, that perspective, I'll just say it in a word, is not to spend $500,000 or $1 million on a machine and facility renovation, but instead to get started by figuring out what are the kind of low cost quality improvements that you can make by investing in machines that in some cases are less than $200 that, mm-hmm. you know, you can order off Amazon and have in 2 days shipped direct to you, where you can add a lot of value, especially on the tooling side of things. So trying to give folks a perspective on not boiling the ocean at once, but getting started with additive, starting small, building some capability, getting some equipment, nailing some wins, and then kind of making a progression towards let's say more sophisticated uses like volume production uses, things like that.
Can you, so Hayden, can any manufacturer, if they really wanted to, could any manufacturer use additive?
Yeah and I would say every manufacturer should, is what I would say, but there's like an asterisk there. So when we talk about printing, right, we're really talking about a family of, per ASTM, 7 processes. And then when you get into the industry, there's all these different offshoots and hybrid. And so really it's a dozen or more related manufacturing processes. And the quality of the parts that comes out, the speed of the process, the cost of the machines and materials varies really, really widely. So when I say every manufacturer should look at 3D printing, what I really mean is every manufacturer should get started with a low cost printer, one of those printers that are in the few hundred dollars range, and just start getting out on the shop floor and figuring out what are the pain points, especially that assembly technicians or other folks in a shop environment, what are they experiencing, mm-hmm. and figure out, is there something I can print, a jig, a fixture, a tool that'll make their life a little easier. And then once folks get used to the technology and they start, like I said, scoring those little wins, then the gears start turning. Can I print, a production part or something else along those lines? Should I add more machines and make it part of my business? But certainly everyone can do it. But I'd say everyone should start fairly small and manageable. You're introducing new technology. There's no reason to start with a run when you can start with a crawl.
Right. And obviously, you know, we work together in partnership. And I think by now the audience knows that, you know, as a manufacturing extension partnership, our goal is to help the manufacturers and in any way possible. Obviously, when it comes to their continuous improvement, you know, if it's their innovative growth services that we offer, it could be, you know, some of our just basics, even some marketing and lead generation. But when it comes to something like this, we work with you. And so is this somewhere where you go in and obviously, if you don't know what you're doing, you want a little bit of guidance and help. So where do they kind of start? And is it, you know, connecting with us, and then we connect them with you, and then you kind of walk them through. Is that one of the best places to start?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly, there's a lot of different pathways, and we at MIT have a really open door. So, you know, we've had an amazing relationship with the MEP, mm-hmm. and we'd love to continue it. And so if folks are in your network, reach out and have interest in additive and want to connect that way, and we can pull everything together, that's great. I mean, it's really, there's an ecosystem in Massachusetts, so there's no reason to kind of pursue these one-off engagements, and then you end up realizing you should have talked to the person who was CC'd on the email in the first place, kind of thing. So yeah, I mean, or if, and of course they can also reach out directly, and then we have courses and other things that are available. I'm not going to give a sales spiel on this podcast, but you can find them online if you're interested.
Yeah. Yeah. So does it take something where you really, I mean, can you get like a basic understanding and then really find a way to implement it? Or does it take a little bit more of an investment in time where you really should, you know, because of your return on that investment, do you want to take a little bit more time and really understanding it the best way possible as a manufacturer before kind of jumping in with both feet?
I think it makes sense to have a conversation with someone like an MEP or an MIT, and there's others in Massachusetts too that I'll mention later. Just so you're not, you know, you don't have bad impressions about what the technology can do or what kind of parts you can print. Because in a former life, I was in a sales role selling printed parts, and I can tell you most of the parts that folks would kind of bring to me and say, "Hey, can you print this?" They weren't good printing candidates. And okay. So, you know, you can have really smart people on your team, have good ideas, read the news, do a lot of Googling on your own, and still kind of arrive at the wrong conclusion. Sometimes that, you know, 30 minutes or 60 minutes with someone who really knows what they're talking about can save you a lot of time and trouble.
Okay. All right.
So where do you see additive or smart manufacturing on a priority scale to manufacturers? Like, how important is it to them?
Yeah.
Or should it be to them?
Well, it's interesting. I think it depends on, like, when you say manufacturer, do you mean like an OEM or do you mean a contract manufacturer? Because it's a really totally different perspective.
Yeah. Give us both. I guess kind of give us both so it kind of helps give them the perspective of both sides.
Yeah. So from an OEM point of view, folks are really interested in eventually looking at production use cases of additive, especially if you're in a, let's call it like a high cost, high value industry. So aerospace, defense, medical devices, those industries have really taken off and they're printing production parts, tens of thousands or more per year of individual SKUs. And there it makes a lot of sense to focus on kind of what's the latest and greatest. The industry is always trying to figure out what's the next machine that's going to be faster, that'll have a lower per part cost that I can roll out into my production line, that'll unlock, you know, the application that I'm just waiting to print until the cost basis becomes competitive. Okay. So it makes a lot of sense for them to kind of survey the industry and see, based on the parts that they make, what technology matches up against it and how capable is it, in particular, the throughput and precision of those machines, as well as how well they're adopted and supported and those other kind of peripherals that can give you an indication on whether the machine will be easy to use or more difficult to use.
Okay.
From a contract manufacturer point of view, it's totally different, right? Because the types of investments that you would make to realize those production use cases are many millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. We're talking metals at least. And so, you know, from that point of view, it's all about how do I make my operations better with additive? At least the way I see it, because it doesn't require you to win new business in order to, you know, not make money, but save money and therefore make money in a sense, right?
Yeah.
And so for them, you know, I think as far as a priority, I guess you asked about priorities. I didn't answer. I'm sorry. So for an OEM, it depends on your industry. If you're in an industry that is high cost, high value parts, it's one of the top priorities, and it probably already is your priority. If you're in one of those spaces, if you're in a contract manufacturer place, I think for a lot of folks, it seems fairly tertiary, and it's not a, you know, there's not customer demand necessarily. You're not trying to win new business with this new capability. So it's just something that's cool. You see it at the trade shows, but you're not sure when do I implement it. So I would say it's probably not your first priority. getting, you know, shoring up your workforce gaps is probably number one, right? Yeah. Working out some of the supply chain kinks that have been going on for the past few years, probably number two. But as far as new technology investments that you might make, additive is probably somewhere behind automation. If okay. you know, you're exploring work cell automation, you know, it's not going to be as productive for you as that could be if you're making many of the same thing. But certainly, you know, for a low cost investment, it should be up there. And a lot of, I'll just say this, a lot of organizations, even people within the organizations, like their children, like there are young folks who have used these printers in high school and college and so on, makerspaces that are really eager to put their skills to work. And you may not typically think of these folks as manufacturing people, but they can be very helpful as far as getting an inexpensive printer into the shop floor, printing some parts and seeing what you do with them. So I would say just think about who's in your network, okay. who already has these kind of skills, who has an interest, has a printer at home, because that can be a low cost and very rewarding way to get started with the technology.
So I have two questions for you. So the first question is, you did talk a little bit about the supply chain. Is this something that will help with this? If you talked about it being a priority. Is this an element that can help with that supply chain issue?
Yeah, it's a bit of a yes and no. Okay. So because it's a different manufacturing process. So if I'll give an example from last year. So General Motors, and I mean, all automotive makers, right, are having trouble getting cars off the line and into customers' hands. GM printed 60,000, I forget what they were exactly, a bracket or something, 60,000 brackets in order to get an SUV off the production line, rather than wait an additional 6 weeks for injection mold tooling. In that case, it makes sense. I mean, they have right, big backlogs, they have the demand that needs to be filled, money that's being held up in parts in progress. And so, you know, it's 60,000 parts, and there's two per vehicle or something, so 30,000 vehicles, right? That's a lot of money. So that's 6 weeks that you're accelerating, you know, your delivery schedule by. You can justify spending the money to qualify a separate manufacturing process. Makes a lot of sense. If, you know, depending on what the part is, if it's a structural metal part or something like this, right? And you say, if I print it, will it be faster than if I get it machined from the vendor that's quoting me 12 weeks? It may not be the case, because you will have to qualify that part for use, and qualification can be really, really a headache. So it's sort of a mixed bag. I think where additive makes the most sense from a, you know, supply chain point of view is really thinking about the next generation of your products. So not how can I replace the current product that I make with a printed part instead. But, you know, as we go through a design review, we want to introduce a new product into the market. Can additive add some value that our current manufacturing processes are limited?
Okay, that's a good point. I think sometimes we get a little clouded in that and we think, oh, if you have additive, it's going to help your supply chain. Like, don't worry about your supply chain. So having a much clearer definition and description of what you're speaking to, it helps us as well in making sure that the audience does get a better understanding of that. So that makes a lot of sense. So my second part of the question was, you obviously are in academia, you're at MIT. We work with a lot of these, you spoke about resources. So on the resource side of things, we work with a lot of these non-traditional high schools that have these innovation pathway programs and different, now they're adding the, you know, additive manufacturing as part of their programs. Do you consider them to be resources as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of, let's say, it depends on the level that you're trying to tackle the problem. So if you're really at the, you know, step zero, you've just thought about additive, you read a couple news articles, you want to get some parts printed. There's the folks who are in high school or just finished high school who have used a printer before, have had some curriculum on it. I mean, they can get you parts in your hand, and they can probably get you some fairly good parts. There's some, you know, devils in the details, but running the machines is it takes a little bit of practice and a little bit of understanding of the parameters, right? It's rarely that you'll just download a file from the internet and press print and get a perfect part out at the other end. So absolutely. And I, you know, especially if you're small and medium enterprise, you have to think about your resources and how can I get something done in a way which is, you know, fast and cheap, but still good enough. And I definitely think that the passion and kind of experience that young people have in some ways is better than folks who have been in manufacturing for 20 years because they have, you know, they have no bias, right? They've just been playing with these new tools and learning about them.
Yeah, they bring something just a little different to the table when they step up. And obviously, you know, we're a big proponent of it. We deal with it like you hit it on the head and how we see, you know, as an MEP center, our initiatives are exactly what you said, the workforce and our supply chain are our number one and number two. And then our third is, you know, the smart manufacturing or industry 4.0. We scaled it back. Those are big words. We like smart manufacturing, makes a little bit more sense, but we focus on that workforce development piece of it. And that's where we look at that. Cause you said again, that we have that aging workforce. So us focusing on bringing those students into it, bringing that little extra something, you know, I've never been able to put my finger on it. They just see things differently as every human being does, but their generation sees things a lot differently, obviously, than mine does. And maybe, you know, from your Kevin's and from the one in between us. So it's, I think it's a really cool proponent. We are big supporters of, you know, not everybody, those options are out there for some of the students that are looking to get into something like this. I have to ask you this, how did you get into this? Like, what got you into this?
This is another funny story. So I'll give you the short version. Okay. So my background is in Middle Eastern politics. And that's what I went to school for. Like, I used to live in the Middle East, speak Arabic.
Wow. And then,
yeah. So it would have been a good icebreaker question. Like, explain your LinkedIn profile because it's a bit weird. and when I was in college, I had a job part time at MIT just to pay the bills. And sort of one thing led to another. And they offered me a full time position right as I was graduating. I said, oh, sure. This is, I don't know, like 8 years ago now. You know, oh, sure, I got to pay the bills somehow. And I thought I would go work for the CIA or something. Like I said, oh, this will be a part-time thing. And then I met my boss, John Hart, who was recently promoted to department head for MEC-E. So congrats, John. And he had some vision. He said, I want to run with additive. I want to build industry programs and so on. And kind of everything else shook out from that. If you work at MIT for long enough, it's pretty hard not to learn by osmosis. And if you are tasked with building and leading relationships and so on, it's even harder not to learn in order to do your job. So that's how I got started. But I'll say, like, I had no mechanical inclination when I got started at MIT. I seriously, manufacturing was the furthest thing from my mind. And now it's a total 180, because once you realize, number one, like the ease with which your creativity can come to life with printing, as well as, like, on the one hand, like the toys and tchotchkes and cool stuff you can make at home, that's really exciting on its own, especially if you've done any kind of like woodworking or anything else. You realize, like, it's kind of a pain, right? You got to get everything just right. You know, measure twice, cut once.
Yeah.
With printing, it's not so complicated in some ways to just realize a finished part. It can be really exciting. And then on the other hand, on the industry side, some of the most innovative products in the world today are the ones that are 3D printed, things that are saving people's lives, that are making jet engines more efficient, you know, new concepts for personal apparel, and the list is endless. So I don't know, manufacturing is everywhere, I guess, and you often don't realize it when you look around the room. Everything that's in your room is manufactured. And then when you think that the frontiers of what is possible in human imagination are being realized by these next generation manufacturing methods, it starts to get pretty dang cool, in my nerdy opinion.
No, I think you're spot on. We say the same stuff. So I agree 110% with you on that. Definitely.
Now, do you see additive affecting manufacturers like soon, like now, or a little further down the road?
Well, it certainly already is. And it depends on, like I said, it depends on your industry. If you're in one of those verticals I mentioned before, you are already printing parts and you probably have been printing parts for 20 years. And now you're starting to move them into production use cases. If you're a contract manufacturer, I don't have the numbers. I would bet anywhere from 25 to 50% own a 3D printer already. The question is, are they making good use of it? Mm-hmm. And own in this case can mean like a $200 printer that sits on a shelf somewhere that they have an intern use from time to time. But yeah, I'm of the opinion because printing is not quite a make anything device, right? It's not like the Star Trek replicator, you know, can't make you food yet. Maybe right. It probably doesn't taste very good, but you know, there's many types of, like, if you go into any shop and you talk to the people who work in the shop on a daily basis, there are things that are for them a total pain. And they say, man, what if we could do ABC? What if I had a jig that did this, a tool that did that? Maybe they looked at it, they got it quoted to be milled, and it was like $1,200, and they said, it's not worth the $1,200, right? Like, if you just go and listen to those folks and think about, is there something creative I could do for them with a machine that could realize many different types of parts very quickly? The answer is often yes, and you just need to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think that's the hardest thing, and that's why we do, you know, that's why we had the event. That's why we did the Manufacturing Future Smart Manufacturing, why we continue to do it, to help with education is really what we're trying to do, and provide that information out there to the manufacturers and helping them. I know when we work with them, Ellen Ellsworth, who is our Director of Innovative Growth Services, she also, you know, that is the one thing that she always says is about, we just have to, if you look at the amount of manufacturers that are not, we kind of have this starting point, a large percentage of them are way ahead of that. So in doing these type of events and in having these conversations with you regularly and getting it out there, it's letting them know that you can take baby steps, and those baby steps can then be turned into something more impactful and more, you know, a bigger return on that investment. And it may take a little bit more time in some cases, and in others it may not. So it's just knowing what's right for you and what you do in your practice and in your processes, and making it work and making it a fit. So if we were to say to you, okay, give us a shameless plug on people getting connected to you, Hayden, how would you do that? What would you say to them?
On how to reach out? Well,
yeah.
So if you go to our website, apt.mit.edu, there's an email down at the bottom, and you can shoot us an email there. We'd love to hear from you. And then if I can plug just the other resources in the state too, if that's all right.
Yes.
Boston in general, by the numbers, it has more printing companies per capita than anywhere else on earth. So if you are in Massachusetts, you're in the right place to learn about 3D printing. And there's smaller companies mainly focused in polymers. You have the Empire Group in Attleboro.
Yep.
Do a lot of great work. They also help with component design, full color models, etc. In Woburn, on the metal side, you have Renscott, that's running an EOS M300, so a pretty productive metal machine. They've made the big machine investment, so you don't have to. Mm-hmm. But they're great. I'm actually going and visiting them on Friday. And then you have both companies who make the machines all over, Form Labs, which is fairly low cost, thermoset resin based printing in Somerville, Desktop Metal in Burlington, as the name implies, metal. And then you have some of the largest, most exciting startups, across production additive in the world are in Massachusetts, Vulcan Forms in Devens, Massachusetts, and Surratt. I actually forget the name of the town that they're in, but those are two metal printing startups that have made a lot of news, and there's too many more to name, but that's just a short list of some resources just right in your backyard. And then if you're a bit more Western and you want a university partner, So there's also UMass Amherst has really nice printing facilities. They're really easy to work with. They'll print parts for you, have a conversation with you. So, and I know the folks over there, they're just really good folks to meet.
That's great. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really good. And obviously, you know, like we said, you reach out to us and connect with us, and we can, you know, we can get you all this. We'll put all this information that we can into, you know, the podcast links, but that's what we do. That's what we're here for. That's why we have an innovative growth services department at MassMEP, because we do see this. This is one of our initiatives. It's one of the NIST initiatives moving forward for the MEPs, and how important this is. So we will always be here, and we will continue to push forward with this and provide as much education on this as we can. So you can reach out to us as well, and we'll get you connected if you, you know, need to speak to Hayden directly, or for any of those resources that he stated as well, we'll definitely get you that information. So we will put it in our little podcast blurb. So yeah. Oh yeah. So that's, I mean, that's great. I mean, I think, you know, we kind of hit everything that we thought was a priority and of importance, that we felt we needed. Obviously we will be back in a year, to do our event again. Hopefully Hayden will be back with us. I have no idea what we're doing yet. We will keep that under wraps for a little while longer, while we try to figure it out. Right now, we're just getting some feedback in and seeing what is the need for those manufacturers that are in attendance. But hopefully we can have Hayden there, and he'll definitely be a great resource, and look for you'll see his name badge. I would say, if you go to our event website, I would say that's how he looks. But the picture that we have of him on our program is him inside of a Tyvek suit, I think, and then a mask. And then I think you have a hat on over top. So all you can see is his eyes and his hair swoop to the side. So that's the only picture that I have of you, Hayden. And that's what I had to use.
They are in fact my eyes, though. So you know, you at least get that. And there's a whole story behind that, but it's a good story. It's PPE that Massachusetts manufacturers made in response to the pandemic, and I was suiting up in the apparel that they put together on an emergency basis.
I love that. That's a great story. Now I know I can use that when I use that picture. I will make sure that everybody knows that. That's great.
People must think I'm such a germaphobe or something to be in full.
No, I honestly, when I saw it, I thought, I just thought it was you. And when Ellen and I spoke to it, and I go, do you think you mind if I use this photo? And she said, I really don't, because that's him. That's his personality. He's fun. You know, he's got a lot of good sense of humor, great wit. So I was like, all right, perfect. I thought you were just like kind of, hey, look what I've got on. Look at me. But now I know the story behind it, so I like it even more, because obviously that was a big time for us as a nation, but definitely us as manufacturers in the state of Massachusetts. So that's really cool. Really, really cool piece. So yeah. So thanks for joining us, Hayden. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
Good, 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 good. Maybe we'll have you back again next time you come across something that you think is super important and you want to get it out to the audience, just reach out to Kevin and I, and we'll get you back in here. So who knows? You might be one of the top podcasts for the year. We do at the end of the year, we go back and we look and see who the top podcasts are. So maybe you'll be it.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got to think of a way to bribe the reviewers then.
get them to subscribe to our channel. We're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, and I think we're also on Google as well. So yeah, we're out there, and we have our own on our website too. So yeah.
Yep.
Well, thanks everyone. Thanks for joining us for the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. You can subscribe to our channel anywhere you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and you can always go to our website at massmep.org. So we'll see you next time, whether it's our space, your space, or cyberspace.